Hey, everybody. Welcome in to the Mackie and Judd podcast. For today's episode of Action Movie Rewind, we're going back to the mid-1970s. We're going back to Death Wish with Charles Bronson. But a quick word before we dive in for Federated Insurance. Federated has been helping business owners for over 100 years, based in Owatonna, Minnesota. I've been a business owner myself. I know what goes into it. I can empathize that you ride that roller coaster sometimes where you love it, but you're also grinding every day. You're solving problems, taking care of employees. It helps tremendously to have an insurance company that gives you peace of mind as you navigate the challenges of running said business. Federatedinsurance.com to find your local representative. And remember, at Federated Mutual Insurance Company, it's our business to protect yours.
Welcome to the party, pal!
Action Movie Reviews with Mackie, Judd, and Rami.
Get to the chopper!
Yippee-ki-yay, mother...
And welcome in to the Mackie and Judd Show. And this is a little bit different this week in that normally we would weave Action Movie Rewind into our normal Friday episode, Judd Zulgad. But
yes.
But Declan has taken his first vacation since COVID hit, and you and I are going to take a little bit of a longer weekend. And so we're actually recording this with very minimal production and me flying the plane instead of Declan. We're doing this on Thursday here so that we can give people some content for the long weekend. So there won't be like the sound bites that you would normally get in Action Movie Rewind. But we are going to do a deep dive into what is probably the OG of our 23 action movies that we've done to this point. I don't think we've done one older than 1974 yet.
No, I know. I'm pretty sure that you are absolutely correct, and this is an interesting one.
So this is Death Wish from 1974. Let's give the summary and some facts about it, and we can do a deep dive here. In this explosive story of revenge and urban violence, Charles Bronson plays Paul Kersey, a bleeding heart liberal who has a change of opinion after his wife and daughter is violently attacked by a gang of thugs in their apartment. His daughter is sexually assaulted and his wife is murdered. Bronson then turns vigilante as he stalks the mean streets of New York on the prowl for muggers, hoodlums, and the like. 68% on Rotten Tomatoes. A $4 million budget turned into $22 million at the box office. Charles Bronson, also a young, creepy Jeff Goldblum as one of the main
very brief
hoodlums.
First appearance in a film for Jeff Goldblum.
Oh, played a huge part at the beginning.
And that was it.
Yep. And we'll get to my take on why like he didn't come back at some point. This is from Wikipedia.
Yes.
At the time of the release, the film was criticized for its apparent support of vigilantism and advocating unlimited punishment of criminals. Many critics were displeased with the film, considering, quote, an immoral threat to society and an encouragement of antisocial behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So this movie comes out and it's like, this is gonna result in some chaos around the country.
Mm-hmm.
So what are your main impressions of, and this is your choice here, main impressions of Death Wish?
So I purposely did this without Declan because Declan would have hated the film.
We're just sparing Declan from this.
Basically, yes. But this is how can I put this? First of all, I think this might have been the first time, and I didn't realize it until I watched it, the first time that I've seen this all the way through. Like, I've seen a bunch of the Death Wish follow-ups that came.
Is Charles Bronson in the sequels?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And this one was different in the sense that it actually had probably more of a plot line and tone to it and was completely serious in how it approached the fact that 1974... New York could turn into a cluster bleep of like muggings and things like that. My main takeaway was, I fully will admit, it's going to be interesting to talk about breakdown. It has huge flaws. It doesn't really, to a large degree, necessarily hold up at all. But let me say this. You can see the beginning of a lot of ideas that crystallized then and were honed through the years.
Yes. This is a pioneer.
In things like Seagal, right? In things, and some good, some bad. But we can't lose sight of the fact that in 1974, to do what they did with the storyline and the idea of how a common citizen who feels violated would approach that was probably a big step. This is going to sound absolutely crazy, but I'm serious. in the cinematic experience of where things were going.
I don't think that's a bad take. So, all right, my main impression of this movie is I had a low bar. I just, there's a lot of, I feel like the late 60s into like the 70s was a very experimental period with movies. Like you're kind of moving out of the traditional,
I think you're right,
you know, the cinema from the 30s and 40s and 50s and the Westerns and formulaic. And there were more risks being taken and more directors were gaining fame in the 60s and 70s. And I can't remember the name of the director of Death Wish is one of the most prominent directors of like the 70s. And the vibe of these movies, like whether it's horror movies from the 70s or these thriller / action movies from the 70s, it's a very like dark and creepy vibe.
Yes.
There's not a lot of like, there's not like a Chris Rock character to lighten it up. You know, there's a lot of these movies are just very dark and grim and damp and
yes.
And this movie has that sort of dread feel to it.
Absolutely.
And somewhere along the line, you know, in the 80s, they found the mix of like revenge and action and death with like Eddie Murphy, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah. Like if Mel Gibson's wife, which I think she eventually did in his film, was killed, he was going to stalk down and find the person who killed her. But then he was going to shoot them with a funny line right before he killed them.
Yeah, there was just more.
You're right, yes.
Yeah.
These were, I think grim's a great word. These were very grim. There was no,
yes.
there was nothing about Bronson that was, oh, that was sort of funny.
Yes.
I'm with you.
The opening scene I thought was kind of funny. You had 53-year-old Charles Bronson rocking a Speedo on the beach, taking pictures of his wife with like a Polaroid.
Yes.
And trying to coax his wife into getting it on the beach. And she's like, no, let's just go back to the hotel. Okay.
Yeah.
I guess. So I actually, before we dive into all the details of this movie, I have one major, major takeaway and take that I want to run by you.
Okay.
All right. Charles Bronson essentially played Batman / Bruce Wayne in this movie.
Okay.
He was Batman. So it's got all the ingredients of a like the first I would say the first Michael Keaton Batman and maybe even like the first Christian Bale Batman, where so you're hunting down criminals in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Check. Gotham City is New York City.
Mm-hmm.
You're hunting down criminals in New York City. You're avenging the death of your own family members by mm-hmm. going on and being a vigilante that doesn't necessarily help the police, but is working sort of parallel to the police to take out criminals.
He's doing what they won't do or can't do.
Correct.
Yeah.
Batman did the same thing.
Okay.
You are a normal citizen without superpowers who has turned vigilante, which is check for both.
Yeah.
And the authorities in both cases are mostly mystified as to like who you are and who's racking up all these different kills. It yeah. is a bat. It's a,
yeah,
like it struck me like half with him. I'm like, this yeah, is Batman.
You know what?
But he's not dressed as Batman.
You're right. Yes. Yes.
He's just going through killing bad guys.
He was going to do what the police wouldn't or couldn't do. And he frustrated the police and the police didn't really appreciate him, but they also were in awe of the fact. Yeah. You know what? That's a perfect, it's perfect. You're right.
What did you think?
I never, because I'm not a big Batman guy, so I gave that zero thought until you just laid that out. You are exactly right. It is. It is largely Batman, and including, if I'm correct here, there are Batmans that are pretty dark as well, right?
Yes. Well, the Christian Bale Batmans are all really dark.
Okay.
The Michael Keaton ones are a little more cartoonish. The first one's darker than the other ones.
I love it.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
So you mentioned like the cops want to find out who the vigilante is, but they're also kind of like, boy, look at the mugging has gone down.
Right, but then they don't like the fact that the rest of New York might turn into vigilantes, so they really don't want to arrest him because they don't want a martyr on their hands, but they just want him gone. Yeah, you know what? I think that you nailed that exactly right. I think that the Batman comparison is perfect.
Yeah, they said
I love it.
They went from like 900 muggings or something down to like 400 or whatever it was.
950 a week to 470.
Okay, because they were all scared of being killed by the vigilante.
Yeah, because the bad guys who were, we do have to talk about the bad guys at some point here too.
Let's just move right into the bad guys here. So you had at least the bad guys at the beginning. You had the three hoodlums, Jeff Goldblum's group, terrorizing the grocery store.
Throwing the ham. But they take a ham and they throw it back with the hams. Like, you would toss that, if you were going to terrorize a grocery store, you would toss that ham, like, down the aisle or, like, across aisles. My favorite thing is the guy takes the ham, takes it out, juggles the ham like it's a football that he's about to fumble, and then puts it back in with the hams.
Yep. And they're spray painting like walls. They spray paint the apartment complex when they find, so they see that, oh, there's a woman and her daughter. We're gonna go follow them creepily.
Yes.
And so they follow the family members up to the apartment complex. They sprayed swastikas on the wall, which was super creepy.
Yes.
And then they do unspeakable things to the wife and daughter, which is like,
what did you think of that scene? Because
super uncomfortable.
Because here's the thing about the majority of that film. You know, when Bronson goes for his kills, they're not really gruesome, right? Like, he shoots them, and then he develops the Paul Kersey patented shoot of, I shot you once, I'll definitely shoot you at least twice.
Yeah.
But the rape and killing scene of Kersey's wife and daughter is, like, super violent.
It is. Have you ever seen, again, this is like a product of the era. So this is mid-1970s. There was just a lot of these types of chances, I feel like, being taken in the 70s in movies. And I'm a big horror movie guy. Have you ever seen the movie from 1978, I Spit on Your Grave?
Mm-mm.
Like, you'd never see it on TV because it's, so it's essentially, it's like an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not even that. It's like an hour and a half. And it's a woman who gets sexually assaulted. And then she goes on like a revenge tour for the rest of the, like, the whole thing is just super uncomfortable to watch. And then she goes on a revenge tour for the rest of the movie and just gruesomely kills like all of the people that assaulted her. And it's just like, you get done watching it and you're like, I feel like I violated the law by watching this movie.
Interesting.
That scene in Death Wish had me feeling like, ah, can I watch, like, ooh, but am I allowed to watch this? Like,
but what was weird about that scene is that it was over the top violent, right? Like, it was really pretty gruesome. Like, it was, to your word, uncomfortable to watch. But then nothing else about the rest of the film itself and, like, the killings and stuff came close. So it was like they said, let's make this as violent and for 1974, gruesome as possible, which then I expected, like, the rest of the film to be gruesome, and it really wasn't.
Yeah.
It was just sort of an odd choice of illustrating in that one scene and instance, we're going to show you this really graphic scene. And then I don't know if they decided after that, that's pretty much it. We're not going to be as graphic.
I don't know. I'm glad.
Nothing
glad
else about the killings was that bad.
Well, here's the thing, that the ultimate thing, like least favorite part of the movie category here. The thing that bothered me is he never gets revenge on the actual killers.
Yes. He just gets revenge on the city's muggers.
Yes. So these guys, these three hoodlums kill his wife. They assault his daughter. And she's basically like in a trance and has not been able to snap out of it.
Yes.
And he never, like, those guys never even come back and be part of the movie. They're just gone. And the police basically say to Charles Bronson, like, yeah, I mean, there's a chance we could find them, but not really. So why not a revenge tour on those guys? Like, why not? Why doesn't he run into those guys?
Because I believe the point of the film is supposed to be vigilante justice against everyone in the city who is mugging and raping and pillaging. So, but again, here's the thing. You're right in subsequent films. I really think that this was one of the films, and it's just one, it's not the only one, that laid the groundwork for the genre of what was to come. So I think if you redid that film now, which they did, I think, with in 2018, I am curious if the Bruce Willis Paul Kersey character in that film does get the bad guys ultimately, because I think in 1974 they were solely focused on going after bad guys without going after the bad guys, where subsequently after that it definitely became seeking revenge on bad guys, but the most important one was the Goldblum group, and they didn't do that.
I mean,
that's my guess.
I should probably just like read more, but I would be curious to know. I'm sure there was a discussion about, okay, as this story unfolds, should he get revenge on the guys that killed his wife or not?
I wonder if they didn't put a premium on that though at that time, because that was probably one of the first films that had one of the first that had vigilante justice as the theme. So I wonder if they just didn't think it was as important because he was going to get revenge on so many potential bad guys. Can we talk about the bad guys, though? Because, okay.
They're everywhere, by the way.
They are.
You can't walk out of your house without getting mugged in New York in the 70s, apparently.
And it might have been true, but here's my favorite.
Give me your money.
Yeah. Come on, man. Come on.
Is it all you got?
Come on, Dad. So here's my thing about the bad guys. Is it not crystal clear? And this might be why the Goldblum Group didn't reappear to get their just desserts in Death Wish. Is it not clear that the producers of that film, which was shot on location in New York, went and found everybody that they could who was probably, let's say, in the demo of 18 to 25 on Broadway and said, do you want to be in a film? We'll pay you X amount. Because, honest to God, I halfway thought about three times, the bad guys are going to break into a Jets and Sharks West Side Story song and dance. Like, they're all dancing around with knives, and they all have knives. But, like, one guy had a gun. Everyone else had a knife. But didn't you think that every one of those guys, for the most part, looked like they came off of Broadway musicals?
Yeah, they didn't look very tough.
They didn't look tough, but they're also like, come on, and then they're like swaying back and forth. I'm telling you, weird. I thought they all came from West Side Story.
I just thought it was amazing too, like the way that the muggers would approach. So Charles Bronson is this like grizzled, he's got like a rugged handsomeness.
And he's luring them in, so like they're following him. Yeah.
But these guys are all just like, yeah, you're right. It's the Jets and the Sharks. It's West Side Story. Like, they're all just kind of like prancing around with their
knives. It's not the way you'd mug somebody.
Very weird. Yeah. They almost needed like a mugging coordinator to be part of the movie. Can we get a real mugger in here to show these guys what a mugger looks like?
Like a mugger jumps you, right? Like Bronson never really got jumped.
And I get that like crime has been a problem in big cities in New York City throughout the years. And like, I totally get that. But was it really that bad? Like, this Charles Bronson gets randomly mugged like six times.
I think it was, but I think the difference is in real New York in 1974, if you got mugged, I think you got jumped. But Bronson rarely gets jumped. Like, he'll be walking down the street and somebody will come out and be like, come on, give me your money. And they're like so far away. They're basically saying, but if you got a gun, go ahead and shoot me because I'm in perfect position to be shot.
That's super weird. Yeah.
I know. There's a lot of very odd things that now you'd go back and be like, why don't we just sort of shoot that differently?
The family, another theme here too, the family did not do, in my mind, a great job of coping with a terrible, tragic situation.
Well put. Yeah.
So a few different things that came to mind here. So Paul, Charles Bronson, really was like not emotional at all when he found out that his wife was dead. Like, the doctor comes out and says,
I'd like to talk about that scene too, but yes, go ahead.
So did the doctor first tell him that his daughter was fine? Well, and then
the doctor first told him and his son-in-law, and I think the doctor told the son-in-law specifically to his face, your wife, she's been raped and mugged and she's resting and she'll be fine. And that's when Paul Kersey says, what about my wife?
Oh, yeah, she died a while back.
Yeah. She just sort of turns around. Like,
she died a couple hours ago.
She just died, sir. Sorry.
And then the next scene, it's like they show a funeral scene. And then right after that, Paul goes back to work. And his bosses and coworkers are like, welcome back, Paul. Good to be back to work.
The line is, we knew you'd come right back. Like,
and they're just back to work. And then they go to Arizona, which we'll get to that part, too. But also, there's the scene where the son-in-law is home with his wife, who has not yet gone into the mental facility.
Yes.
She's just still traumatized and in shock.
Yes.
And I love how, like, the doctors apparently let her out of the hospital still in shock and traumatized.
She's basically comatose, but she's not in a coma.
So I think she goes home.
Yes.
And she's laying in bed at one point, and son-in-law walks up as if, like, everything's normal, and, oh, I thought you were asleep, honey. And she just turns and screams at the top of her lungs. Yes. Like, they're just acting like nothing's happening.
Yes.
So I don't know. The family feels like they just sort of shovel their feelings deep into their bodies. And
then Bronson starts to, and then Kersey starts to kill bad guys, is like purged of all guilt and trouble. And like, he's now playing records.
He's playing
the
Herbie
son-in-law
Hancock.
Comes over. Yeah. Who, by the way, was the composer for the film, Herbie Hancock. It is that is a weird one. And yes, the doctor informing Paul Kersey his wife is dead, that was, without meaning to be, almost comical though. Cause Paul Kersey, Bronson goes, what about my wife? Yeah, she died a while ago. Sorry.
A couple hours back. I don't know. Yeah, their body's still in there.
But the other one, but your daughter's fine. So, like, what the hell? Okay, answer me this. And Donna actually stopped in the room and asked the same question. So the scene of the funeral, they bury his wife in Connecticut, which is not far from New York. It's snowing in Connecticut.
Correct.
But I can't figure out the time of year for the rest of the film, because in New York, sometimes it's snowing, but sometimes it looks like it's summer or at the very least spring.
That's true. They're not.
Like, can you help me out? Because in Connecticut, it's basically a blizzard.
So it has, my guess is it's probably around, it's between like Thanksgiving and Halloween time.
Okay.
I'm guessing it's like, it was like an early snowfall in Connecticut.
Because I lost track.
But there's no snow on the ground in New York.
Right.
So it's clearly not January, February.
Right.
It's probably not Christmas, because there would be snow on the ground almost.
You know, there was a, to your point, there was a scene where he comes out of his apartment and there is like a Halloween part, a costume, a bunch of people in costumes, right?
But it's because we had a Halloween blizzard here one time. So it's probably between like Halloween and Thanksgiving.
I just couldn't figure out if they had like shot it in different segments and couldn't really decide, let's just keep the snowing.
That's also the creepiest, darkest time of year, too. And it's just a perfect setting for a movie like this for it to take place around that time.
Good point.
There's less sunlight, so there's just more time for muggers to be out on the corners.
And for Paul to go out, to go out with his gun.
Another key theme was the guns. So you had Paul coming to terms with his inner animal throughout this movie, right?
Yes.
It's the first time he hits that mugger with a sock full of quarters, and he goes back to his apartment and just lets out, like, he just starts swinging it around and lets out a scream at one point.
Right.
Guzzles some whiskey. But after his wife dies and after the funeral, and he goes back to work, and welcome back, Paul. We're gonna go on a trip to Arizona. We got a real estate developer down there named Ames. And so they go down, they meet Ames down in Tucson.
Yes.
Have you been to Tucson before?
I don't think so. I'm pretty sure no.
I have been to old Tucson where they do the old Western shootouts and stuff. And it's like the John Wayne movies were filmed there. It's kind of cool if you ever get a chance to go down there. But they meet down in Tucson with this real estate developer, Ames, who loves guns.
Yes.
And we find out.
Stuart Margolin, great, great character actor. He was on The Rockford Files for years.
Okay.
Angel Martin on The Rockford Files.
And so we find out that Paul was a conscientious objector during the Korean War. And so he wasn't in the actual war. He served as a medic.
Yes.
His father was killed in a hunting accident and his mother refused to let him use guns. And so he has just like very little experience with guns and killing. And
but he's got his daddy's genes for shooting.
He does. And Ames sneaks a gun into Paul's luggage, which is something that would never be able to happen today.
Did you not find that scene hilarious?
Briefcase. They get on the plane.
Did you not find that great? Yeah, I'd like to check this bag. I think it might have a pistol. I'm not quite sure.
Not sure. Maybe check it, or maybe don't, because it's the 70s and no one cares. But he gets back to New York and he finds this gun, and that's when he finally takes it out and he makes his first kill, and it feels good. So what did you think of that whole thing? I actually thought it was brilliant. I just like the storytelling in this movie was really good.
Go back to the scene in Tucson at the Western where they're reenacting, a robbery or something. Mm-hmm. And he's watching that. And I agree. So during the course of the scene in Tucson, you can see the wheels in Paul Kersey's mind grinding about how, this is how you do it. This is how you get revenge, extract. I give them credit for doing a really good job. It might have lasted too long, but they did a really good job of sort of building up not just his angst, but how he planned to exact the revenge about that angst. Like, this was pretty well thought out storyline-wise and pretty well scripted. So, yeah, I thought that whole thing about the backstory being that his dad loved guns was clearly a good shot, I guess. Because he got shot, as you said, in a hunting accident, but it was by a guy who thought that Paul's dad was a deer or something. So he just accidentally blew Paul's dad away.
That's why I don't hunt.
Yeah, and I hate guns too. But anyway, that was the part of the story that actually made it a real film and not just a revenge, let's kill a ton of people film.
Were the other Death Wish follow-ups?
No.
Were they more plot-driven or no?
No. He kills people left and right. They are pure eye candy entertainment of death.
That's hilarious.
So, yeah, no, this was the one where there was actually a goal that's pretty clear of how they're going to get from point A to point B. Could they have gotten there a little bit quicker? In my opinion, once again, yes. But it was, for that time, pretty well scripted.
Your thoughts on liver and spaghetti as a dinner?
Very Bronson.
Have you ever had liver?
Yes, I like liver. Most people hate
it. I feel like I've had it when I was a kid. And...
Most people hate it. Kids abhor it. I like it.
What does it taste like? I don't remember.
So they describe it sort of as gamey-tasting sort of meats. It's like something you would have killed and shot and skinned and stuff. It's pretty good, though.
It doesn't sound like something you would
enjoy.
It's
pretty good, but it's very... Look, the Bronson character itself as Kersey, or the Kersey character, it's pretty well honed. Like, this was, I can't say this enough because it probably looks cliched now in 2020, but, you know, in 1974, to come up with this vigilante character who is going to exact the type of revenge that guys like Seagal eventually did was pretty brilliant.
Yeah, Seagal's a good comparison because Seagal movies are all like, they're not like vigilante necessarily, but they're all just like getting revenge for something that happened.
And you just kill, and Seagal, I feel like Death Wish and Seagal films share this in common. The kills are the most important thing.
Everything leads up to the kills.
Like you just want a lot, but I feel like it's like pitch count, don't you? It's like... Ultimately, you'd like to kill the guy that did you wrong, and Seagal always does. But in the meantime, it's just going to be a lot of kills.
Yeah, and did Charles Bronson ever add like quippy one-liners to his game in the sequels? Or
yes, no? Actually, there. Yes, to your point, he 1,000% did, including one where I believe a guy has participated in a rape in a parking garage, and Bronson walks in and. Or was it in a basement? Anyway, long story short, the guy has a cross on. And Bronson says, "Do you believe in God?" And the guy's like, "Yeah, I do." Because he knows he's going to die. "Yeah, I do." He goes, "Good, because you're going to meet him." And he blows him away. And of course, he shoots him right through the cross.
It's amazing.
And the other thing about films during that time, too, is it's clear they tell the actor being killed, you got to sell it. So if they get shot, they either fly backwards, like way too much probably, or if it's the patented Kersey double shot, he shoots them once and he shoots them twice. And the second time they like pop up really convincingly.
Yeah, there is. We still haven't evolved fully. Like now when you watch these movies now, like the kills are very realistic. Then there was a time like back in the 30s and the 40s, you watch like war movies from the 30s or something like, or like Sergeant Stryker, that John Wayne movie from the 50s. And every kill is like this dramatic, spin around, like X's on the eyes. And this movie wasn't that corny, but it was like pretty corny still. And the blood looks super fake and like way too bright.
That's the thing is, how was blood so bad back then?
I don't know.
That's a great point. It's also, what's the color? It's also sort of pink.
It's definitely not a realistic color.
Like, it doesn't look like real blood.
Yeah. I mean, I've never been shot before, but I...
No, but I mean, if you cut yourself, the blood is a specific, to me, sort of darker red, right? Like, it's a red, but it's not pink. Like, my blood's not pink.
I feel like every kill in that movie looks like the top of a Maker's Mark bottle or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's
a very odd...
Another nitpick in this movie for me,
yep.
And maybe this is just me, but... The son-in-law calls Paul dad.
Which confused me, by the way. Like, I was finally trying to think, is that his daughter-in-law then who died? Yes.
It's his daughter who died.
Yes.
And it's, not who died, I guess, who was in a coma or comatose. So the son-in-law is calling his father-in-law dad the entire movie.
Yep.
Is that weird?
Yeah. Yes.
I think that's weird.
Okay. If he had done it like once or twice, then it's not weird. But here's what I didn't get about the entire film's dialogue. And it was true of the son-in-law with Paul Kersey, because you already calls him dad constantly. And it's also true when Paul Kersey goes to the police station the first time to ask if there's been progress on the investigation into the murder of his wife and his daughter being assaulted. Did you notice the amount of times the guy at the police station that talks to Paul Kersey calls him Mr. Kersey? No, it's like 8 times.
Okay.
Mr. Kersey, we just don't know. Mr. Kersey, it's like
Very formal.
Okay, yeah, and you know what? That's fine, once or twice.
People were more formal in the 70s, though. People aren't formal at all now.
But it was almost like this, it was almost, I don't know what the guy, I don't know what they were thinking. But yes, the dad thing to me became odd and confusing because they did it so consistently. I did start to ask myself, so is that his daughter-in-law who got assaulted? Because I became confused as to who was the actual kid.
According to Wikipedia, it's his daughter.
Right, but to your point, that's where I didn't need the son-in-law calling him dad 87 times.
Yeah. Maybe that was a thing. I don't know. Maybe 50 years ago, did people call
not as far as I know
their father-in-law?
But anyway, just streamline the script. Like, you didn't need to call him dad every single time.
Before we get into the... Well, let me ask you this. Who is your favorite character in the movie? I'll give you mine. I think it was the police chief guy. The old guy who addressed his staff like this very dramatically every time.
The commissioner or the other guy who was chasing Kersey. The inspector.
Okay, maybe that's what I'm thinking.
Are inspectors still a thing in the States, by the way?
Well, do we
still have inspectors?
I don't know.
Did we ever really have inspectors? I thought inspectors were in, like, England.
The guy I'm thinking of is the one who tells the police force, the media's going to ask you if we've got any clues. You can say yes, but don't tell them we have 1,000 clues. Like, basically saying we don't know, we have no idea
that might have been the commissioner.
Who the vigilante is.
Yes.
That guy was my favorite character. I thought that guy brought it for this movie. And Bronson was good, too. Don't get me wrong.
Bronson is good, yeah, but I feel like to pick Bronson is a cop-out. I'm going to go with Ames.
Okay, yeah.
Because he's sure.
He essentially opens the door for Bronson.
Yeah,
to
and he is not, and I would not call him, Stuart McGowan's character, I would not call him a good guy. Because he definitely has an agenda here. And he's definitely a gun-toting, gun-happy Republican. But that being said, I sort of like the character.
It's a good character.
In the writing of the film, the Ames character in taking Paul Kersey's character up to where he got to was really pretty well done. Like, he pushed him without knowing he pushed him, which was intriguing.
The character development in this action movie, if that was a ranking, if we had ranked all of the
really
action
good
movies that we have seen based on character development,
yes,
I think this one would be in the top half for sure.
I agree with that. It was the muggers, for the most part, couldn't act worth a damn, but some of the primary people could act.
So you bring up the muggers. That brings us to our definitive bad guy rankings here. And right now, Hans Gruber from Die Hard is still number one, ahead of Cyrus the Virus from Con Air, Brad Wesley from Roadhouse.
Yep.
Cobra Kai as a group from Karate Kid.
Yep.
Mr. Joshua from Lethal Weapon. Ivan Drago from Rocky IV. The Russian mobsters from John Wick. Dennis Hopper from Speed. Bodhi from Point Break. And Dom from Fast and the Furious.
Mm-hmm.
At the bottom, from the bottom up, it's the incompetent Russian military from Rambo 3. Gans and Billy Bear from 48 Hours. Sloan from Wanted. And General Hummel from The Rock. I think the bad guy in this movie is just the muggers. All of the muggers, right?
It's very unclear who the bad guy is in some ways, but yes, the basic one is you're correct. It's the muggers.
It's all of the muggers. And, you know, it's because it's kind of a nondescript group and because they're mostly terrible and not good at mugging and are, like, not suspecting
they all have switchblades and dance around.
Yeah.
They're
not because, like, the category of definitive bad guy rankings is how iconic are they? How good are they as villains?
Yes.
I gotta say, and it's not like they did what they were supposed to do in this movie. They're basically there to make Charles Bronson look great, right?
Yeah.
So I gotta say, they're probably toward the bottom.
Oh, like, they are.
I can't put them.
If you try to throw a curveball into this entire conversation of the ranking, and you were to say, well, actually, by the end, Paul Kersey is sort of the bad guy because he's just going to kill people without question.
Hey, he's the good guy, though.
That debate is just too difficult to have. And I would say this. I would say very little thought seemed to be given to the work of said muggers. So I would agree. They are near the bottom of this list.
So I think
if you put them at the bottom, I would not object.
I think the incompetent Russian military, like, you had hundreds of soldiers just getting mowed down by
Rambo. That's fine.
Rambo.
Wherever you want to put them, I'm fine.
So they're second from the bottom. The muggers are second from the bottom.
That's fine.
Again, it's whatever. They played their role. They did what they were supposed to do. They came in for 5 minutes in the fourth quarter.
Danced around, got shot by Paul Kersey, and went home.
Now we get to our 1 through 10 Seagal ranking system here to see where Death Wish ranks. The top action movies we have reviewed to this point. Die Hard is a 10 across the board for us. John Wick, Commando,
yep.
Fast and the Furious, Expendables, Roadhouse, Hard to Kill, Rocky IV, Independence Day, and Point Break are all an 8 or higher. At the bottom, we have Bloodsport, Wanted, Rambo 3, and Air Force 1, all a 5 or below.
Yep.
And in the middle, it's Lethal Weapon, Casino Royale, Karate Kid, Speed, Out for Justice, Con Air, and The Rock. Mm. So what's your 1 through 10? How many Seagulls are you giving this movie?
This is really difficult. Because I appreciate where this came from, and I do have to give it a nod in the fact that they were trying to do something that was just sort of starting at that time. But that being said, there's some rare air to deal with here. You know what? In fairness, I'm going to just give it a 5.
Okay.
I'm just going to go straight down the middle because there are definite faults here, but some weren't their fault because of when this film came out in 1974. I'm just going to give it a 5.
It's funny, I'm giving it a 6.5, so I'm higher on this movie than you are, my reasons for not giving it a higher score are, there's not as many layers, like, it's not funny, you know, it's not trying to be funny, and there was no comeuppance on the bad guys at the beginning of the movie, which I felt
I think they went back to the stage, probably. Goldblum, I'm telling you, I'm pretty convinced they recruited people who were on Broadway to basically
show up. But that's
not
an explanation for why they didn't get killed at the end of the movie.
They probably weren't available. Goldblum probably went back to his role in Mamma Mia or something.
Was he a stage actor?
I have no idea, but he certainly looked like he might have been back then. Certainly looked like he was dancing around, man.
So that gives it a 5.7. We'll round up to 5.8. It's a 5.8 on this scale, which puts it as the 6th worst action movie that we have reviewed out of 23 to this point. It's just ahead of 48 Hours, Air Force One, Rambo 3, Wanted, and Bloodsport.
Now, we do have to say this in defense of Death Wish, and probably in the same vein of the conversation, 48 Hours. We are dealing in a weird territory with those films where they were one of the first to do that.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, like, in fairness to them, they're not going to be as good as the great ones now, or, you know, that came along in probably the later 80s into the 90s. But they were trying to sort of perfect this whole thing.
Yeah, and so they're not going to get things as perfectly.
Can you imagine,
as Die Hard would.
If Paul Kersey, sure. if that film, Death Wish, in 1974, if they had given Paul Kersey like 3 funny kill lines, like, our whole view would be different.
Yeah, if there's just a touch of humor.
Yeah.
If if the son-in-law was also a vigilante with him and brought some, I don't know.
I will say this. Of all 23 films in action movie rewind that we have gone through, Death Wish might have the best "we'll be back with a sequel" ending of any of them.
Yes, I love the ending.
That was...
So he sees the mugging taking place,
yes.
And instead of, you know,
no, they're just picking on the girl in Chicago in the train station.
Yep.
And he goes to help her and picks up her stuff.
He looks over and he does the eye, one eye closed and the finger gun.
Yes. Does that not say...
That's great.
See you real soon.
That's pretty damn good. So that's it. So Die Hard still remains at the top with John Wick and Commando as the 3 best action movies we have reviewed. So this, you and Declan flip-flopped. So Declan actually recorded, I have not listened to this yet.
Yes.
He recorded his pick for us to watch next week.
Yes.
So I'm going to click play on this. He told us, do not listen to this until you guys are done. I don't know what this contains, but let's click play. Wait a second. It helps if I pod this up.
Okay.
There we go.
All right, fellas, here's the deal. It was my turn to pick last week before I realized that I was going to be making mistakes with Brother Liam in North Carolina. I had 3 movies in mind that I really wanted to pick, and I had one that I was for sure going to pick last Friday before I realized the error of my ways. However, things have changed a little bit, and I'm going to break the rules a tad for Action Movie Rewind.
Oh, no.
I know we are anti-superhero movie.
Oh, no.
But we have to honor the late, great Chadwick Boseman. And we are going to watch Black Panther. I know you're anti-comic book movies. I know mostly Judd is. This is over 2 hours long, but it's an action-packed movie from start to finish. Chadwick Boseman and Michael B. Jordan are phenomenal. You're going to love this film, and because I'm not here, you can't argue with me. So that means, no matter what, we're going to do Black Panther next Friday for Action Movie Rewind when I return from North Carolina.
All right. So Black Panther, Chadwick Boseman, rest in peace.
Yeah, that's a
I have
sad
seen
one.
This before. So here's my beef with this pick.
Okay,
I feel like Declan, after 23 action movies, is still trying to pick movies that are good. And that's hard because this segment is not about good movies. It's about action movies.
Right.
And Black Panther is a legitimate good movie. So if I watch this again, and I watched it in theaters, if I watch this again and come away with the same impression, I'm probably going to downgrade it in the rankings because there needs to be – this isn't about like cinematic masterpiece. This is about – this is about – there's a certain set of criteria for an action movie that we are looking for in this – like Die Hard has things you can poke holes in and
– it's also 80s.
It's over the top.
That's different too.
Yep. So we'll see. We'll watch it back
What's the running time of Black Panther?
Let's see here. Oh, Black Panther. Runtime.
I'm big on running time.
Oh, you're not going to like this. 2 hours and 15 minutes.
Oh, good God.
An extra 15 minutes of your life.
I mean, the one thing is – Death Wish was done quickly.
Hour and a half, boom, boom.
That's what I want.
Get you out.
That's what I want. And lots of observations, excuse me. Lots of things to observe from that film.
Yep. So, and I already know, I think, unless something changes, I already know what movie I am picking for next week into the week after.
Okay.
But we'll leave it there.
I feel like there might be a violation of the pick here because he's not here.
But we agreed to let him pick. And it's no slight on Chadwick Boseman or Black Panther. It just goes against like a lot of the criteria that we have set for this segment. So we'll do it. We'll do it. And then we'll have a talk with Declan if we need to, on the show next Friday.
Yeah. I do think that we need to be very careful about not getting into a comic book routine.
I agree.
Superhero routine.
Totally agree. I think we can dabble a little bit. Like, I think it might make sense to do the first Michael Keaton Batman at some point. And like, there's definitely, but if we get into like a Marvel run or something, then it's.
I feel like that crosses a line that we don't want to cross.
I would agree with that.
Yes, I would go for – if we're going to do superhero comic book films, I would do the first of a few. But, like, I don't want to get into trying to break those down because in some ways, too, they're too different.
Yeah, that's a different Rewind series for us.
It's a genre all its own, which is fine.
Yep.
Like, our guy Rami loved it. But yeah, I think we have to be careful because we really do want to get into the meat and potatoes of the true thespians like Steven Seagal. Yeah.
And there are plenty left, by the way. But that's a wrap on this.
There's more Seagal left.
There are.
I've got them written down in my notepad.
Under siege. that's a wrap on this episode of Action Movie Rewind. And you can always spend the entire week watching the movies that we throw out there and writing your own notes and sending us your thoughts on Twitter, too, because it's hilarious when you guys do deep dives along with us. But we will see you next time for Action Movie Rewind.